Welcome to Gateway to Financial Freedom. I'd like to thank you for allowing us to share ideas that we hope will make a positive impact on your lives. Our goal is to awaken and empower you to changes necessary to preserve your individual and God-given freedoms. My name is Larry Andreen, and I have the pleasure of introducing my good friend and associate, Keith Anderson, the primary educator for this series. Over the years, we've dedicated our efforts to educating as many people as possible through lectures, recordings, printed materials, private consultations, and transitional tools necessary to protect property and freedoms. This educational series will truly be an experience. We believe that Gateway to Financial Freedom will have a positive, profound effect on your life. It'll certainly help change the way you view the overall picture of events influencing your life, past, present, and future. Through education, we trust you'll be awakened, enlightened, and guided in your individual quest for happiness. When we think about it, what's really more important than our happiness? Material for this series has been gathered over an exhaustive 18-year period. We'll attempt to give accurate accounts of historical events, and they will not necessarily reflect what has been and what is being taught in our controlled public school systems. A word of caution, many of the issues presented will be startling and oftentimes difficult to accept at first because of the conditioning that we've been through in this country for the past 60-plus years. Although when the truth is presented, as Keith can do, I believe you'll love it and want to share your newfound knowledge with others around you. At the end of the course, you'll hear an astounding interview from a former congressional researcher exposing the almost unbelievable organized conspiracy to control the lives of people of America, and the world for that matter. We hope you'll continue with your personal research in order that you form your own opinions on these critical subjects and then apply them to yourself. Please have an open mind to the truth and be willing to act according to your own conscience. You'll find that Keith has a clear and honest way of presenting his story, and you'll quickly realize that he tells it like it is. And although we've all been influenced by others, he presents the truth his own way. I'll share a personal testimony with you, if I might. After years of independent study, I was invited to one of Keith's presentations. I listened to many, many others in the past discuss history, the Constitution, the patriotic movement, etc., and I found it to be quite boring in most cases. They all seemed to say the same things, and I didn't want to hear it again, really. Well, Keith's presentation, to my surprise, wasn't the same. I was really, really pleasantly surprised when much of what I had learned over the past few years suddenly fit together. Actually, I was stunned at what I heard, but still being pessimistic, I asked the question that had been haunting me over the years. I asked, if this freedom you talk about is so good, then why are those of us seeking to be free so poor? His answer was quick and simple and witty like Keith is capable of doing. He said, I'm not. Well, from that moment on, I really felt rich, and whether I had money or not, I felt free. And as a result of being willing to seek the truth and take action, my personal growth and enjoyment of life has been greatly enhanced, and it's obvious to everyone around me that I'm a very happy person now. It's hard to have a clue of what it's like until you experience it, because most of us have not experienced freedom in our lifetimes, and we'll go into that in great detail. Knowledge is the key, and you'll certainly get that in the course. I've test marketed an earlier and poorly produced version of this series over the last 3 years. Keith's material has certainly stayed fairly consistent. I think today I think the world is ready for this material, and I think most of you are going to be extremely surprised and extremely proud that you were able to purchase it. I think you'll find out that Keith is very good, and he'll offer answers to questions that you have hidden away and you've been conditioned not to ask in your lifetime by the system. I'd like to think that we're sort of re-pioneers of freedom. Where our founding fathers were considered rebels to England, we label them heroes. On the other hand, many Americans have been labeled patriots lately, and it's silly that the word patriot is labeled as sort of a rebel in this world today. The media has done that to us. I consider anyone who does not follow the distinct laws set forth in our Constitution for the United States of America to be a rebel. And that would mean that these rebels would include Congress, the executive branch of government, the judiciary, and almost all elected and non-elected public officials. We'd have to get rid of these people because they are rebels to our Constitution. And you know, we'd have to get rid of most of our police officers too. Almost every one of these people has violated their oath of office, where they promise to protect our rights by supporting the Constitution for the United States of America and or state constitutions. You know, the tragic part is that many of them don't even know they're doing it. They've been so conditioned and so trained to do what they're doing by this system, they don't realize that they're violating your individual, God-given, and highly protected rights under the Constitution. So we're going to look at things a little differently than in the past with our new knowledge, and I think you're going to be excited. We must keep in mind, though, even though these people are violating our rights occasionally or often, they are responsible for their action because ignorance of the law is no excuse. So they have a responsibility to the individual. It is our intention to offer a clear view of the distinction between lessons and values we've been taught throughout our lives by the system and the values and principles outlined in the Constitution for the United States of America. When you've completed the series, we hope you'll have developed a completely educated and honest way of viewing events as they occur throughout the world. Education is essential because it helps us shift our attitudes from confusion and anger towards the complicated and corrupt governmental systems that we think we understand, and we'll realize we have choice of jurisdictions. Knowledge of the right to and also not to contract allows us to benefit from our individual talents, receive more revenues, keep more of what we make, and protect the assets that we've built. As a nation, we face an uncertain future in America. America is confused, frustrated, pressured, tired, angry, and we probably have less faith in government than any time in history. And even though this course will certainly make you aware of these issues, please don't be alarmed that you've come to hear a prophet of gloom, because you won't. Keith Anderson will help shine a light into the darkness and illuminate truths that have been hidden in our society for decades, allowing hope for our future. We know we have things to fix in this country and throughout the world for that matter, although this lecture is not going to devote much effort towards trying to repair the broken United States corporate government. Democracy is so entrenched in its corrupt ways that it is beyond repair. We've been asleep for such a long time that it's our belief that the only hope of fixing the existing government is gone. We must now simply wait for it to fail from its own corruption and greed. And only then will we the people restore our constitutional republic. As a highlight to that, I've got some very good friends who have spent time working for congressional candidates, etc. And they were working for the Republican cause. And 1994, during the congressional election, they were very excited because we were going to restore our government. And we had some discussions about that where I said it's not going to make a difference. And even though we would all like to believe so, they said, oh no, it's going to make a difference. Well, the election came and went. The contract with America was here. It came and went. Even though the Republicans did pass out of the House of Representatives what they promised to do, I think one of those items was passed into law. It either got stymied in the Senate or it was vetoed by our president. So therefore, we can see that our people have no control over the government anymore, or very, very little control over the government anymore, and we'll discuss that a little later in the program. Now, please don't expect a mass exodus from our current system as a result of this course. We'd like to see things very positive. We don't believe that can happen, though, because far too many of the U.S. citizens are receiving benefit checks from the government each month to allow changes like this to occur. And, of course, the large majority of those people receiving benefits will not vote to take away benefits from themselves, so, therefore, the socialistic programs continue. And with over 50% of the population receiving a check from the government each month, or a government agency each month, you can probably guess who they'll vote for in the future elections if they want their benefits to continue. It certainly won't be the Libertarian Party. How can we expect to make changes or return to the Republican form of government protected by our Constitution if the majority of citizens have joined a socialistic benefit system? Our rights have been substituted for privileges and will continue to be eroded unless we individually learn to take steps for privileges and will continue to be eroded unless we individually learn to take steps to preserve them. We believe this educational series will demonstrate that you can be free in America. It's my pleasure now to share a little bit about Keith Anderson, our presenter. Keith may well be the premier educator in America regarding the Constitution, freedom, sovereignty, and trusts. This series provides a wonderful opportunity for those seeking the truth about our relationships with the corporate government controlling our lives and how it differs from the free republic that we the people own. With this knowledge, your individual talents will surface, allowing you the freedom to prosper financially, reduce taxes, retain control of property, and protect your assets. Keith has approximately 18 years of intense study of common law and free enterprise behind him. He has a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Administration from Fresno State University, now the University of California, Fresno. He graduated with the award of the most promising individual in the field of business. He's given thousands of lectures on constitutional law, taxation, and biblical law. And a few years ago, after he announced his candidacy for Congress in California, criminal charges were brought against him from the State of California Revenue Taxation Board. Keith's opinion is that this was a political action, and he proceeded in whipping him good in court until they conveniently lost his files. At the same time, the IRS briefly investigated him for almost 3 months and dropped all investigation, and he hasn't heard from them in over 11 years. As a result of his studies and persecutions, he was awarded an honorary doctorate degree in common law. He's also authored numerous publications, and he's founded numerous organizations, including one that, resulting from his work, has won 24 straight tax cases in California. And Keith will go into detail on these issues in the series. Most importantly, the Gateway series must be credible and verifiable. The information must be true and honest. We ask that each listener research and verify the material for themselves in order to reestablish your free status. This series includes a section on points and authorities that should be helpful in your study. Keith is very happy that, as his quote here, it is now much simpler to establish your free status now that we've properly identified the conditions of slavery we brought upon ourselves. I'd like to prepare you for a few concepts that could create some controversy for some in the course. And I think if you continue on and you study his reasoning behind it, I think you'll be very much with us. I want to first point out that Keith is a Christian, and he will touch on biblical references from time to time throughout the course. In respect to the non-Christians, or the many non-Christians, he will not go into detail from the Bible in the general course. And for those interested in biblical history, we've enclosed a separate reference tape, or actually two reference tapes, on historical biblical reference that I think will be exciting. Please understand that we respect each individual's choices, and we believe that most faiths share the same basic values that we will teach. You may be asking, why use the Bible at all? Bible doesn't sell, it's not a good marketing tool. Well, history shows that our Constitution was written using basic biblical principles. So therefore, we'll base our material on these concepts. In any event, I don't believe we'll have any disagreement on the essential elements necessary to freedom. Keith believes that God gave us a free will, and we can make personal choices in our lives. He doesn't believe, however, that the government should be involved with funding, encouraging, or forcing certain unconstitutional or immoral activities, or that we should be individually forced to support it through our tax dollars. He'll briefly discuss his view of the government's involvement in the abortion issue. Please understand that this argument pertains to the government's role in forcing the taxpayers to fund abortion throughout the world. I think you'll enjoy Keith's refreshing wit, his honesty, his talent, and unceasing desire to share the truth. In the years I've known him, I've never known him to once stray from his high moral principles. There'll be numerous references to certain terms that I think I'd like to prepare you for, such as the word slave. Well, I'll define it. It's a person who is wholly subject to the will of another, one who has no freedom of action, but whose person and services are wholly under the control of another. To us, a slave is anyone subjecting themselves to controls through contract with the government agencies, or at least in this case, in the case of our government. We no longer have the freedoms of controlling our own lives, liberty, or property. There should be no question as to the importance of this term throughout the course. Keith will use the word communism throughout the course, or communist system. That's defined as a name given to proposed systems of life or social organization based upon the fundamental principle of the non-existence of private property and of a community of goods in a society. Keith will show very clearly that almost no one in this country has owned private property since March 9, 1933, and that unfortunately the democracy in the United States follows all 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. Keith will often use the word counterfeit to relate primarily to our Federal Reserve notes, or what we would normally term as money. That is defined as to forge, to copy, or imitate without authority or right and with a view to deceive or defraud by passing the copy or thing forged for that which is original or genuine. Most commonly applied to the fraudulent and criminal imitation of money. Now, money, according to the Constitution for the United States of America, is gold and silver coin, no exceptions. Federal Reserve notes are not notes, and they are not defined as money. And that will be a subject covered later. Gateway to Financial Freedom will uncover many challenges to the democracy or the governmental system that's in place today, and at the same time offer numerous solutions. Our goal is to offer as many solutions as possible. Many of the solutions offered will be hard to accept, and you might be inclined to say, forget it, this isn't worth it. However, there will be solutions or transitional tools for everyone, and we encourage you to stay with this because it's going to be exciting. Now, a little bit about government. We must be aware that most Americans belong to a democracy, a form of government quite different from the republic that the Constitution for the United States of America demanded. These very distinct governmental principles will be taught in detail, and many of you will be surprised at the dramatic differences in the two. Both major political parties in the United States, the Democrats and the Republicans, are party to the democracy. Why does the Pledge of Allegiance say, and to the republic for which it stands? That is, if we belong to a democracy. Why doesn't it say, and to the democracy for which it stands? We'll explain the major differences as we go. The following examples, however, are that which will not change no matter who this country elects from the two major political parties in future elections. We often refer to them as Republidents or Demopubs, or you can make up your own. In any event, what we're trying to show is that there's very little difference between the two parties, even though they sound different. And I think political history has fairly well proven that to be true. In any event, I think the following statements will show, or will start to demonstrate, that they don't represent we the people anymore. So we'll cover these following statements very, very detailed in this course. The foreign-controlled Federal Reserve Bank will still control their so-called money supply. The government will still borrow counterfeited Federal Reserve notes into existence. The so-called national debt will still be a huge factor in their economy. The property of U.S. citizens will still be collateralized for the so-called national debt. Our God-given rights will still be exchanged for privileges. Americans will still be punished for receiving privileges from the government. Elected representatives will still make the majority of their decisions for their government instead of protecting individual rights of the people or of our government. The schools will still use the same books teaching the same material dictated by the same subversive tax-exempt foundations and the New World Order promoting education their way. Churches will still be rewarded with tax exemptions for being quiet about the abuses of government. The judicial system will still refuse true trial by jury. The executive branch of government will still be simply a figurehead for the real powers controlling the world political and economic systems. We'll still have a welfare state of great magnitude, succeeding in eroding the value of the individual labors, morals, and integrity of America. And even though there's some changes being made in this welfare system, that still will be true. We will still have a socialist social security system, totally out of control, and certainly one of the biggest scams forced on any society in the history of the world, and we call it oftentimes a Ponzi scheme. We'll still remain in the same state of declared national emergency that we have unwittingly lived under since 1933, and we'll still be controlled by the same government that actually declared war on the American people in that same year, 1933. Individual God-given and constitutionally protected rights will continue to be eroded by the same lawmakers that we thought we elected to serve us. Lawmakers, judges, the executive branch, and elected and non-elected public servants will continue to violate their oaths of office where they swore to protect our rights. And they will still want to take our constitutionally protected weapons that protect us from enemies, foreign and domestic. And those with Social Security numbers and other benefits will still be slaves to the government. In the past, during my school times, I found history to be a kind of a boring subject, and I was never very famous for getting wonderful grades in that area. But I think when you start to study these topics that I have just discussed and what I'm discussing in this first introductory tape, I think you're going to find that it starts to become quite exciting. And when our individual freedom is at stake and the freedom of our family and our future generations is at stake, I think you might become quite excited about this this subject. With this tape series, we'll offer honest education and genuine hope. We'll try to demonstrate the art of individual freedom. And if you're waiting for the mass exodus from our current system, I think you can forget it. We don't believe it can happen. Again, when over 50% of the population receives a check from the government each month, it's unlikely that much change will occur soon. The government has created a dependence that's very, very hard to break. So what we're going to do is teach individual decisions, individual freedom issues that I think will change your life for the better. So we can experience freedom in America more than anywhere else in the world. And with truth, knowledge, and faith, we can each enjoy life, liberty, and happiness and truly thrive. I'd like to discuss the history of democracies and republics, and I think maybe open some eyes. The word democracy, our system of government today, is not mentioned in the Declaration of Independence. The word democracy is not mentioned in the Constitution for the United States of America or in the constitutions of any one of the states of the Union, is to my knowledge. So what is this word democracy that we hear about daily, and why is it used so often when we thought we were in a republic? When our children recite the Pledge of Allegiance, of course, they don't really know what they're saying when they say "and to the republic for which it stands," because they have never known a republic. And since at least 1933, we have been a democracy in this country, but it's been taken from us. It has not been given away. It was taken from us. We voluntarily did not understand what we were doing. So we're going to make you very aware of that republic and that it still exists today. The fact is, the Constitution for the United States of America is almost forgotten in the curriculum of our public schools. What a disaster for the future principles for which this republic stands. The term democracy is preached throughout America, but hardly anyone knows what it stands for. Even the so-called conservative talk show programs are using the word democracy constantly. And where is it stated that we are a democracy? The Union of Separate States forming the United States of America established a republican form of government under the Constitution for the United States of America. This means that individual sovereign states, like separate countries, unified to form a limited government in order to establish uniform rules and principles that everyone must follow. Under this limited government, each state would still retain its sovereignty, its free status, although the national government was formed to establish uniform standards throughout the states. Yet, do you ever hear the word republic anymore? I maintain that if our founding fathers had wanted a democracy for the United States of America, they would have adopted one. What was the intent of our founding fathers when this Constitution was written? I think the following quotes will very well depict what has happened and how we lost control of our government. The evils of democracy were well documented by our founding fathers. So here's some quotes that I think will be of interest and maybe help to prove that point. On May 31st of 1787, Edmund Randolph told his fellow members of the newly established Constitutional Convention that the object for which the delegates had met was to provide a cure for the evils under which the United States labored, that in tracing these evils to their origin, every man had found it in the turbulence and trials of democracy. On June 21st, 1788, Alexander Hamilton made a speech in which he stated, "It had been observed that a pure democracy, if it were practicable, would be the most perfect government. Experience had proven that no position is more false than this. The ancient democracies in which the people themselves deliberated never possessed one good feature of government. Their very character was tyranny, their figure deformity." Alexander Hamilton also said, "We are a republican government. Real liberty is never found in despotism or in the extremes of democracy." Samuel Adams warned, "Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy that did not commit suicide." James Madison wrote the following, Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. Now let's contrast what our early founding fathers, etc., have said about our democracy, and let's contrast that with the Republic, what they said about the Republic. George Washington, in his first inaugural address, dedicated himself to, quote, the preservation of the Republican model of government. Thomas Jefferson, our third president, was founder of the Democratic Party, but in his first inaugural address did not use the word democracy a single time, although he did refer several times about the Republic or the Republican form of government. Even Chief Justice John Marshall of the Supreme Court, 1801 to 1835, said, between a balanced republic and a democracy, the difference is like that between order and chaos. Now let's not get the republic and the democracy confused with Republicans and Democrats. Those are not the same things. Republicans and Democrats are members of the democracy primarily in today's world. They do not represent the republic anymore. And I'm sure I'll probably get some argument of that. However, let's look at each and every public official and ask the question, has this person violated my rights to life, liberty, or property in any way, shape, or form, or infringed on my right to contract or not contract? And I think that's the important thing. Now, republics and democracies have been around for a few years now, I think. In fact, the first recorded written regulations whereby men ever proposed to govern themselves took place in Athens, Greece in 594 BC, supposedly. A man named Solon was chosen by a few of the wisest citizens of Athens to help stabilize the turmoil that enveloped a land without rules. These rules were to be known as the Laws of Solon, and it began an event that has become man-centuries-old search for eternal problems of government. The basic laws and principles set down by Solon laid the foundation for all republics through the ages, including our own. Solon introduced into the written record the foundation of government by written and permanent law instead of government by incalculable or unchangeable decrees. He set forth one of the soundest axioms of all times, that it is a well-governed state when the people obey the rulers and the rulers obey the laws. It is this basic rule of success in the republican form of government is imperative to follow. It was the true republic that established the ideal that rule was accomplished through honoring written laws established by an unchanging constitution. Leaders would also be required to bind themselves down to the chains of the unchanging constitutionally protected rules. The problem through history, however, would be very difficult to accomplish, as man can be a cruel and power-hungry animal when he fails to follow the moral principles of God. So we have what I believe to be a tragic evolution of democracy. Democracy evolved from the original principles of the Republic, in that written rules were set up to follow. The obvious difference being that the original rules became clouded with new codes of law set up by an aristocratic commission. So about 150 years later or so, after Solon developed his rules, Rome sent a commission to Greece to study and report on the legislation of Solon, and a commission was set up to report its finding to the assembly, where they adopted what were called the 12 Tables. This code based on Solon's law became the written constitution of the Roman Republic. This, I believe, set up the first, or one of the first, mixed governments with features that included elements of a democracy. However, they were careful not to provide a government founded by and responsible to one class alone, called the democracies. From the historical perspective, it's generally recognized that the political democracy is probably the worst of all forms of government. The primary reason for this is that the democracy is responsible primarily to the aristocracy and not to the people. In my opinion, this is accomplished primarily through control and deception by the ruling class. As an example, in our country, the masses are manipulated through the media, primarily owned and controlled by the aristocracy. There are very large profits to be received by those who control the political processes of this country. Why do you think it is that political candidates or incumbents are willing to spend millions to be elected to a government position that receives only thousands in compensations for doing so little. The government in the United States, in my opinion, is the result of international big business in control, or you might say out of control. Imagine in your lifetime you've known people who were maybe fairly power hungry, or maybe during school you found you had acquaintances that really had to be in the limelight, had to control things, and maybe to the point of being obnoxious. Just imagine those same people with a whole lot of money and a whole lot of influence. They can probably do some things, maybe get a little bit dangerous. One example of what could be considered a problem is the election of public officials. And let me give an example that I like to call my tin god syndrome, spelled S-I-N-D-R-O-M-E. I don't mean that they are our god, just simply that they have taken control as maybe someone who thought they were a little bit more important than us. But imagine yourself being approached by a local civic group who asks you to consider running for office. And they liked some of your ideas and your competency, and you decided to go ahead and do it. You thought that might be kind of a fun thing. So you started to campaign. And during your campaign, you felt a special feeling developing inside you each time you spoke to a group of interested constituents. In fact, you know, these were usually maybe at first set up to where you had some very, very one-sided, interested people interested in your cause, maybe your same political affiliation or whatnot. But you felt this power stemming from the receptive crowds and a kind of a special thrill that you'd never experienced before started to come over you. And as your following grew, so did your confidence, until this newfound feeling of power became really exciting. And you realized that you could actually sway the attitudes of people by giving them a little individual attention, sort of by shaking their hand, paying them compliments, addressing your speeches to allow each person watching to feel that you're interested in them personally. They actually believed that you felt their pain individually, and they believed that you could heal their pain by solving their problems. The power became really magnificently infectious, and you were really hooked on this phenomenon. Now, during the election, you also made promises to these individuals. You would be asked, well, gee, what are you going to do about this, Mr. Candidate? And you would tell them, well, I think that's a wonderful idea. I'm going to take care of it this way. Here's what I would do. Well, you were dealing with that individual's problems. Okay, let's assume that you win the election, and after your euphoria had subsided, you were forced to assess your new position. However, you were excited to get into that new office and hire your friends, I mean your staff. Of course, you had to admit that the realization of solving problems and keeping the promise that you made during the election frightened you a little bit, but you're willing to deal with them because you had a responsibility. During the campaign, you'd come to the realization that by keeping people off guard, by answering questions with vague answers, you could handle almost anything. Of course, you hadn't considered that after the election, you'd be forced to actually deal with these issues. Unfortunately, your ego and excitement for power carried you away into this fantasy land of maybe a little corruption and forgotten promises. You considered that your constituents were now the little people, sort of your flock, and you were kind of the king. They looked up to you for an answer to everyone's problems. You then became, though, responsible to the public as a whole. The individual would have to wait until you solved the problems of the general public first, and this would, of course, not be an easy task. As your years in office progressed, you found yourself making decisions on your votes, on how it would look to the majority of your constituents instead of voting your conscience. Re-election, of course, became the most important factor. Even though your conscience reminded you often that you weren't being forthright in your actions, the security of the office, the money, and the great opportunities that came your way were overwhelming. Your decisions became based on self-preservation, and you were really stuck in a system. By becoming wrapped up in the power trip, you totally forgot that your constituents are made up of individuals, and each one had a single vote in the election, and each one also had the rights to protections of life, liberty, and property. And you promised to protect those individual rights in your oath of office. However, after the election, no matter who he voted for, this gentleman or these people still retained their God-given rights, reinforced by the Constitution for the United States of America and the individual states. So each individual truly did retain his rights, but you felt that you were only responsible to the public as a whole. And just like what has happened in a democracy as opposed to the republic, the individual has become very insignificant, and now it's everything for the public as a whole. Does that seem more like communism to you or socialism? We're going to go into this subject a lot more detail. Keith does a wonderful job of presenting this down the road. Now, our founding fathers were very concerned about us losing our freedoms to this government out of control. And I'll go back just a few years to Rome again. Tribunes in 350 BC were set up with the express purpose of protecting the people from their own government. This was much like our Bill of Rights is today. And, of course, this was designated by our founding fathers for exactly that purpose. The secret to an honest government is in controlling the public officials hired by the people to effectively represent their individual God-given rights to life, liberty, and property. The tragedy of the democracy is that the individual rights gifted to us by our Creator are systematically eroded until they are not recognized. Chaos develops, and impartial order is replaced by a total corrupt control by a few. This could be termed government of the government, by the government, for the government. Of course, instead of the people, by the people, for the people. Historically, the meaning of the word republic might be summarized this way. Dr. Will Durant explains, the Greeks learned that, quote, man became free when he recognized that he was subject to law. The Romans applied the formerly general term republic specifically to that system of government in which both the people and their rulers were subject to law. A republic is defined as a government of laws and not of men. It was with this full understanding that our constitution makers proceeded to establish a government by which, by its very structure, would require that both the people and their rulers obey certain basic laws. Laws that could not be changed without laborious and deliberate changes in the very structure of that government. What has happened? I don't know. When our founding fathers established a republic in the hope, as Benjamin Franklin said, that we could keep it, and when they guaranteed to every state within that republic a republican form of government, they well knew the significance of the terms they were using. They did everything in their power to create a permanent form of government with rules set forth under the principles outlined by God. They were also very aware of the tragic history of the democracy. Perhaps the most accurate statements about the failings of a democracy were written by an infamous German corporal while he sat in the jail cell as a political prisoner. Now this might be a little bit unusual to hear because of this gentleman's past. It is reported that these words were eloquently written by Adolf Hitler, but I think you might enjoy them, that maybe even somebody that dastardly could actually come up with something this intelligent. His quote, surely nobody believes that these chosen representatives of the nation are the choice spirits or first-class intellects. Nobody, I hope, is foolish enough to pretend that hundreds of statesmen can emerge from papers placed in the ballot box by electors who are anything else but averagely intelligent. The absurd notion that men of genius are born out of universal suffrage cannot be too strongly repudiated. Measures of momentous importance for the future existence of the state are framed and discussed in an atmosphere more suitable to the card table. Indeed, that suggests a much more fitting occupation for these gentlemen than that of deciding the destinies of a people. Not one of the representatives of the people will pay homage to a superior truth and devote himself to its service. No, not one of these gentry will act this, except that he has grounds for hoping that by such a conversion, he may be able to retain the representation of his constituency in the coming legislature. Hitler obviously realized that on occasion, a truly capable and honest person would find himself in a legislative position. He also realized that the result would usually be similar to the following, as he went on to write, nobody will have the courage to say, gentlemen, I'm afraid we know nothing about what we are talking about. I, for one, have no competency in that matter at all. Anyhow, if such a declaration were made, it would not change matters very much, for such outspoken honesty would not be understood. The person who made the declaration would be deemed an honorable ass who ought not to be allowed to spoil the game. Those who have a knowledge of human nature know that nobody likes to be considered a fool among his associates, and in certain circles, honesty is taken as an index of stupidity. Thus it happens that a naturally upright man, once he finds himself elected to Parliament, may eventually be induced by the force of circumstances to acquiesce in a general line of conduct which it has based in itself and amounts to a betrayal of the public trust. That feeling that if the individual refrained from taking part in a certain decision, his attitude would not alter the situation in the least, destroys every real sense of honor which might occasionally arouse the conscience of one person or another. Finally, the otherwise upright deputy will succeed in persuading himself that he is by no means the worst of the lot, and that by taking part in a certain line of action, he may prevent something worse from happening. Does this sound a little bit familiar to you? So many people expect the government to fix everything in this country. In fact, I believe that well over 50% of the people in this country expect the government to fix it. But how can we expect the government to fix everything when you consider their track record? Has the government ever fixed anything? And why does the general public not ask why this is happening? Why is it that we have become more and more dependent on our government? Certainly it is not any chance happening, please believe me. The national government, of course, is not the government of we the people anymore, and it hasn't been officially since 1933, when bankruptcy was actually declared in Congress. It was truly brought to light in 1938 when the higher judges, the top attorneys, and the U.S. attorneys were called into a secret meeting, and this is what they were told. America is a bankrupt nation. It is owned completely by its creditors. The creditors own the Congress, they own the executive, they own the judiciary, and they own all the state governments. Take silent judicial notice of this fact, but never reveal it openly. Your court is now operating under admiralty jurisdiction. Call it anything you want, but don't call it admiralty. Since that time, we've lost most of our God-given freedoms to a foreign government. Each branch of our so-called checks and balance system has been severely altered to the detriment of the original sovereign entities. We can no longer trust the executive branch, and we have puppet legislators writing statutes to control every facet of our lives, and the corrupt judicial system is enforcing international contract laws that nobody understands. So where's the government that our founding fathers tried so hard to protect?
The base
of power in this country was to remain with we the people. But unfortunately, this power was lost to those corrupt leaders acting in the name of government, such as politicians, bureaucrats, judges, attorneys, etc. This unfortunate transfer of power has been accomplished while the people have slept. And at Hosea 4:6 of the Bible, it states, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, because thou hast rejected knowledge." I believe that ignorance and the failure to follow God's laws comprise the root of our problems in this world today. And our world is made up of individuals, and it's time for each of us to take responsibility for our own actions. As long as Americans continue to ignore sound moral principles and allow the media to dictate our values, public schools to be manipulated, and the government to control our daily lives, we'll continue to suffer the consequences in the future, only I believe it'll get worse. Our precious republic will drift farther and farther from our grasp. We hear daily of this democracy in the United States. I hope that there's a movement to change that and to ask some of these people where this democracy occurred, how we became a democracy, and where it is written in the Constitution or any of our state constitutions for that matter. And if we do this, I think our legislators and our public officials will start to change. We're actually going to teach them that the difference between democracy and republic is that the democracy is a dangerous one-vote system and the republic is a safer three-vote system. Of course, many of them already know it and just are not telling the story. The one-vote system of the democracy is that of election day. And if elected officials do not perform to the people's expectations, it's very difficult to do anything about it. On the other hand, with the three-vote system of the republic, we have the election vote, the grand jury in the case of capital crimes, and the most powerful of all, trial by jury, which has been forgotten in this country. Our founding fathers set up a government by and for the people. The problem is that the people have been bought off by the government, and it's a foreign government at that. Half the people in this country, as I said before, now receive a check from the government. So when it comes to voting time, who are they going to vote for? They're either going to vote for Demopubs or Republidents or whomever. It really doesn't matter, as they're very much alike in reality. They are both party to a system that issues checks to the people who rely on government for their livelihood. So with this educational program, we're going to help you become aware of the truth and expose this corruption that has occurred for so many years in our system. As Winston Churchill once said, men stumble over the truth from time to time, but most pick themselves up and hurry off as if nothing happened. Well, we don't want to be those people that hurried off as if nothing happened. We want to be those people who have made a difference and who have actually changed the system around us. It can be done. When we discuss the democracy, our system of government today, we're also talking about a government under the Federal Reserve System. And this is a lot of what Keith will be discussing later on. And I'm going to give some quotes right now that I think give us some substantiation for what we're going to be discussing. Here's one from Congressman Charles Lindbergh, December 23rd, 1913, where he says, this has to do with when the Federal Reserve System was passed. This act establishes the most gigantic trust on earth. When President Wilson signs this bill, the invisible government of the monetary power will be legalized, and the worst legislative crime of the ages is perpetrated by this banking and currency bill. The caucus and party bosses have again operated and prevented the people from getting the benefits of their own government. Outspoken Lewis T. McFadden of the House Currency Committee back in 1935, 1936 stated about the Federal Reserve, quote, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks, hereinafter called the Fed. They are not government institutions. They are private credit monopolies which prey upon the people of the United States for the benefit of themselves and their foreign and domestic swindlers, rich and predatory moneylenders. Mr. McFadden died mysteriously in 1936 after three attempts on his life. There was a little fear of the monetary system with a gentleman named President Abraham Lincoln when he issued United States notes which were to save America from the world bankers. He didn't last too long. He was murdered shortly after. In 1963, shortly after President John F. Kennedy discovered the secret to the Federal Reserve note, he ordered through his executive order number 11004 the U.S. Treasury to continue Lincoln's plan. He was also murdered shortly after that. For what reason, we really don't know, but we have some suspicion. Another quote from Thomas Jefferson. The central bank is an institution of the most deadly hostility existing against the principles and form of our Constitution. I am an enemy to all banks discounting bills or notes for anything but coin. If the American people allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children will wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. Another Thomas Jefferson. I believe that the banking institutions are far more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. Already, they have raised up a moneyed aristocracy that has set the government at defiance. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs. Another dandy quote to consider, this is from Meyer Amschel Bauer, alias Rothschild, the banker. Give me control of a nation's money and I care not who makes the laws. President James A. Garfield stated, whoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry. What happened to us? Congressman Wright Patman, chairman of the House Banking and Currency Committee from 63 to 74, put it this way. Where does the Federal Reserve get the money with which to create bank reserves? Answer, it doesn't get the money, it creates it. When the Federal Reserve writes a check for a government bond, it does exactly what any bank does. It created money. It creates money purely and simply by writing a check. The Federal Reserve, in short, is a total money-making machine. The following quotes are from the book The 200-Year Debate by Washington State Senator Jack Metcalf, now Congressman Metcalf. What the Fed actually uses to create this money is the faith and credit of the United States. In other words, they are purportedly creating an obligation of the United States without congressional appropriation and without a vote of anyone answerable to the people. The United States, that's you and I, is now guaranteeing an obligation of the Federal Reserve System, owned and run as a private banking system by and for the large banks. He goes on to say, "Never forget, money is power, and the authority to create money is the greatest power of all." And finally, he summed it up, "The ultimate corruption is the corruption of a nation's money system for private profit. The problem is the Federal Reserve System." Much of this Gateway series is dedicated to discussing the Federal Reserve System and the power and control they have over the people of this country. And even though it was placed into effect in 1913, it really didn't receive a lot of power until March 9th of 1933, when, as Senate Report 93-549 stated in 1973, that's, quote, "Since March the 9th, 1933, the United States has been in a state of declared national emergency." Well, Congress really doesn't have the power to declare an emergency. It has the power to declare war. So what they in effect did was Congress declared war on an emergency. Quite a clever little trick. Referring to the middle of this exhibit, this Senate report, it states, "The vast range of powers taken together confer enough authority to rule the country without reference to normal constitutional processes. Under the powers delegated by these statutes, the President may seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad, institute martial law, seize and control all transportation and communication, regulate the operation of private enterprise, restrict travel, and in a plethora of particular ways control the lives of all American citizens." And this situation has continued uninterrupted since March 9, 1933. In the introduction to Senate Report 93-549, it states, "A majority of the people of the United States have lived all their lives under emergency rule." Remember, this report was produced in 73. The introduction goes on to say, "For 40 years, procedures guaranteed by the Constitution have in varying degrees been abridged by laws brought into force by states of national emergency. And in the United States, action taken by the government in times of great crisis have, from at least the Civil War, in important ways shaped the present phenomenon a permanent state of national emergency." Is this amazing? I mean, how is it possible that this would go on for all these years and the public at large wouldn't find out about it? Wow. Of course, our program wouldn't be complete unless we talked about the Internal Revenue Service. Well, the Internal Revenue Service is actually just the collection agency for the Federal Reserve. If I were to say that you have been intentionally defrauded and tricked into filing and paying federal income taxes, you'd probably agree. But most of you would probably not do anything about it, because the fear of being persecuted would be too much to be concerned about. So we go to our jobs during the day, and we come home, and oftentimes we find the TV ready for us, and we say hi to our kids, and we sit down, and we try to unwind from the day because it's fairly stressful. And we get up the next day and go about our business, and we've lived in this stupor for so long, we don't know any different. So we're conditioned. And as long as we stay ignorant, everything will stay the same or get worse. The fact is, no provision of the IRS code requires anyone to file or pay income taxes. Actually, it can be argued very successfully that to do so is unconstitutional, illegal, and treasonous. This is because a compulsory income tax would violate the Constitution's three taxing clauses, the Bill of Rights, and the 16th Amendment. In order for the income tax not to be unconstitutional, it had to be written on a non-compulsory basis and written in a way so that it appears mandatory. It has to appear mandatory. Oh, by the way, a good definition of fear is false evidence appearing real. It doesn't have to be real, but if you tell a big enough lie long enough, people are going to believe it. The U.S. Constitution forbids the federal government to impose any tax directly upon individuals. And in addition to that, Chief Justice John Marshall, in McCulloch versus Maryland, 1819, states, the power to tax involves the power to destroy. United States Supreme Court Loan Association versus Topeka, 1874, stated, to lay with one hand the power of the government on the property of the citizen, and with the other bestow it on favored individuals is nonetheless robbery, because it is done under the form of law, and is called taxation. You've probably seen the next two of these before. Jerome Kurtz, Internal Revenue Annual Report, 1980. The IRS's primary task is to collect taxes under a voluntary compliance system. And then Mortimer Kaplan, Internal Revenue Audit Manual, 1975. Our tax system is based on individual self-assessment and voluntary compliance. Senator Henry Bellman in 1969 stated, in a recent conversation with an official at the Internal Revenue Service, I was amazed when he told me that if the taxpayers of this country ever discover that the Internal Revenue Service operates on 90% bluff, the entire system will collapse. And Senator Daniel Inouye of Hawaii stated, individuals voluntarily impose an income tax upon themselves when they file a return. Based on research performed by the Congressional Research Service, there is no provision which specifically or unequivocally requires any individual to pay income taxes. And how many Americans pay them without question? And when we do pay our income taxes, where do you think the money goes? Well, that's something I think will be answered in the course. This introduction has been produced to help prepare you for Keith's material and for a better understanding of the issues facing us in America. I've addressed a number of concerns that affect our daily lives, and it's amazing to me that it could be possible that so many Americans could be deceived in so many ways for so long. It's time we wake up, educate ourselves and our families, learn to capitalize on our God-given talents, and prosper financially and spiritually so that we may have the freedom to pursue happiness in our own way. I've discussed the problems. And now I'll open the gateway to Keith Anderson's guided tour of the Art of Freedom, and we hope you'll enjoy it.